On stage in studio, host D. May Roberts speaks with Inventive Portland director Samantha van der Meer, artistic director of Shaking the Tree Theater. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Galavan interviews curator Rix Axum about Andy Warhol prints, the biggest ever show of Warhol prints now showing at the Portland Art Museum. But coming up next is Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the film screening Paying the Price for Peace, the story of S. Brian Wilson, on Friday, October 21 at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Vietnam veteran S. Brian Wilson was run over and nearly killed by a military train during a nonviolent protest in 1987. Since then, he has not stopped calling attention to the endless illegal wars being waged by the United States. Again, that's Paying the Price for Peace, the story of S. Brian Wilson, on Friday, October 21st at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, October 11th, 2016, and you are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM on the air, kboo.fm on the web. Today's guests, we are traveling to distant places, but places that are indeed part of our conversation here. They should be part of our conversation, because both of these topics are tell us more about who we are as a nation and as individuals, and in the ways that we find to accept responsibility and own it, or in other cases to dodge responsibility and hang a spirit catcher or dream catcher's thing on your rearview mirror and figure you're done with racism against indigenous peoples. So there's a certain kind of peculiar racism where white people did not want to deny their whiteness and embrace indigenous culture and identify with it in ways where they give themselves permission to deny responsibility by participating in events that are not really part of their culture. They are able to, many people are able to sidestep all the horrors of trying to get an education on a reservation. Education? Are you kidding? Trying to get food on a reservation. Yeah, they haven't lived that reality, but they have chosen that they're going to live other realities of First Nations people, so ones that they carefully pick and choose. That isn't helpful. Owning responsibility for what white ancestors did to Indigenous people. That's what makes a difference. And what makes a difference, too, in places farther afield of that, of course, I mean Syria, that's another question, too. It is so awful in so many respects. It's funny. And we still, even as intelligent people on the left, still haven't really come to grips with it. Again, it's about responsibility and owning a situation. We also have a situation in Oregon where, although Oregon loves to call itself green and you can get a license plate with a tree on it, wow, how cool is that? But we still have, we still live day after day with the Elliott State Forest future in jeopardy. Joining us this morning is Maria Farinacci with the Save Elliott Forest Coalition. There is a big action going on in Salem today. Good morning, Maria. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, thank you.
I understand that there is activity down in Salem today. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is about and why this is so important? What is it about today that makes this crucial?
Today is a state land board meeting here in Salem, and the state land board is the decision-making body for the fate of the Elliott State Forest, and they are going to decide in December whether or not to sell and who to sell the Elliott State Forest to.
When they go forces to the forest, we get stock timber, when they try to cut the forest, and we'll be more than willing to shoot you.
Today there's a rally outside the state land board office, and there's like over 60 people here, all rallying to support keeping the Elliott in public hands.
So the forest is a unique treasure that it seems absurd that we would trade Elliott State Forest's future. And all of that would mean to our children's future, to trade that, but to cut it down, saw it into boards, and make a few dollars on it. That will assuredly disappear immediately. What possible justification? Why is it so much more important for the forest to be logged?
Yeah, the Elliott State. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, the state land board is looking to sell the Elliott State Forest for a one-time profit. They say that the Elliott State Forest isn't making them enough money. They aren't able to manage it in a way that turns a profit for the state, and it is linked to the Common School Fund. And they are justifying it by saying that because they need to make money for the schools, we need to sell the Elliott so we can keep making, the state doesn't keep losing money on it. However, the Elliott State Forest only provides a drop in the bucket to the amount of money that the schools need in the state of Oregon. And it's an outdated system to link the Elliott State Forest profits to school funding, and that needs to change. But also the state needs to figure out how to manage the forest in a way that is sustainable and economical. There's forests all over this state and all over this, all over the Pacific Northwest that are being logged in a sustainable way. And the Elliott State Forest has primarily been clear cut, and that is no longer a viable option for management in terms of keeping protected areas unlogged. The state has been sued multiple times now for logging, clear cutting endangered species habitat, and that's why they have lost money. And they need to figure out a new way to manage the forest for our future, and to keep it in public hands.
Yeah, Maria, hang on there. I got one more. Just want to briefly wrap this up. You want to let us know what people could do to participate?
Yeah, people can do a lot to participate in this process. The decision to whom they're going to sell it to is going to be made in December, and the state land board is going to be making that decision. The state land board is made up of the governor, treasurer, and secretary of state, and they are all here at this meeting today, but you can also write to them, you can call them, you can go to their meetings. They're all going to be running for office as well. Ted Wheeler is the treasurer, and he's running for the mayor of Portland, and he is going to be making this decision in December. So he is a great person for folks in Portland to talk to and tell him. You can tell him that you're not going to support him unless he supports the Elliott. If we had a split decision in the state land board, that would be, you know, that would be a good thing for the Elliott. It would be very unlikely that they would go forward with the sale if even one of the three members disagreed with the sale. So those three individuals are very good folks to talk to and pressure, and it really is in their hands, like, what the future of the Elliott is going to look like. So,
thank you so much.
Portland Audubon. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, so go ahead. Audubon?
You can get in touch with Portland Audubon. They are working on this project full-heartedly, as well as the Save the Elliott Coalition, but we're based in Coos Bay. But SaveTheElliott.com is somewhere to get more information about this process, as well as Cascadia Wildlands.
That would be the central point, of course, SaveTheElliottForest.com. And putting pressure on right now is what will make a difference. If we don't, if we lose this, we'll regret it for the rest of our lives. We will definitely feel the after effects. The loss will be, if we really do think of ourselves as connected to the land, the loss of the forest will indeed be something that we'll live with and live without for the rest of our lives. Thank you again for that. I've been speaking with Maria Farinacci with the Save Elliott State Forest Coalition. Go ahead and make those phone calls, get in touch with Ted Wheeler, and stand up for that forest. Our next guest is Stephen Zudis. He has two pieces out. One is dead serious, and the other is very funny. To me, it's like the scary clown phenomena, where something is so god-awfully horrible that it's funny. This, indeed, the serious civil war is all of that, and the absurdity is inescapable. Stephen Zudis probably needs no introduction for most listeners. Stephen is a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco. He serves as a coordinator of the program in Middle Eastern Studies, is one of the country's leading scholars of U.S. Middle East policy, and a frequent guest on Air Cascadia. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us today. Wow, what you have, there are two pieces here that are just extraordinary. But one, of course, pretty serious, and one hilariously funny. The anti-war movement must listen to voices within serious civil war. First thing, I think that the anti-war movement believes that it does listen to voices within serious civil war.
Many people do, and I'm talking about a particular segment of the anti-war movement and the anti-imperialist left, who quite correctly are very skeptical of U.S. motivations in Syria, who quite appropriately oppose U.S. arming the rebels, who quite appropriately oppose having troops on the ground and U.S. airstrikes. And as you know, and your listeners probably know, I've spoken out in opposition of such U.S. policies for quite some time. But there are some elements who have flipped to the point of rationalizing for the Assad regime, which is a brutal dictatorship, not by any measures a progressive, is corrupt, and is responsible for the vast majority of the 85,000 estimated civilian deaths over the past 5.5 years. Some people have been going on these what they call peace tours, but are effectively propaganda tours, who talk about, oh, how everybody, you know, it's not really a civil war. It's just a plot by the United States to overthrow this secular government. You have people, you know, saying that There was never a nonviolent movement, despite 6 months in which millions of people engaged in all sorts of nonviolent action for a democratic transition before even though many thousands of them were massacred and some of them took up arms. There are indeed some moderate rebels, despite what some people say, but they are definitely small and scattered, and the hardcore Islamists dominate. But to say that every oppositionist is some kind of foreign-backed Islamist extremist is a gross oversimplification. And finally, and what the humorous article is about, is that the rationalization for Syrian-Russian airstrikes almost word for word parallel the rationalizations for Israel's attacks in Gaza. I mean, they both say, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, United Nations, all those that document war crimes, they're all biased. You can't believe them. Democracy Now! And Al Jazeera, et cetera, are all biased. They're just giving terrorist propaganda. they're saying that this is legitimate self-defense against terrorists.
Yeah, and that's always right. Legitimate self-defense against terrorists. Right.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of Hamas. I'm not a big fan of al-Nusra. These are hardcore Islamist groups that have killed civilians themselves. But that does not justify bombing entire apartment blocks and killing hundreds and hundreds of civilians, which is obviously what Israel has done on Gaza with some regularity in the past several years, and what the Syrian regime is doing to Aleppo currently, and what they did to Homs, and what they've been doing in other urban areas that were controlled by rebel groups.
Yeah, it's Gaza all over again. Indeed, I want to commend everyone's attention to that. We want to put links up on the KBO website. This has been Aircast-KDF for Monday, October 11th, 2016, and our guest has been Dr. Stephen Zulis. Thanks so much for that, Stephen. And, of course, Maria Farinacci with the Sue Elliott Forest Coalition engineering for us today. Steve Nasser, thank you so much, Steve, for a marvelous job as always. Thanks again. And Kathleen Stephen, it's the KBO News and Public Affairs Director. Thanks, Kathleen. I'm Chris Andre.